Up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? If they paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on promoting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seed.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome! Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, January 17th, 2024.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Green jobs is a big subject. Our guests today are Dwayne Norris and Alex Alvarez, founders of Soulful Synergy, and Paul Prestonew, who is the Director of Community Engagement. But first, we'll talk about EV battery recycling in New Jersey, New York City's nesting herons, the Pebble Mine victory, and New York's right to repair law.
We like to start our show with good news. The Lakota People's Law Project reports that on Monday, January 8th, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the state of Alaska's bid to fast-track the legal process, overrule the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and gain approval for the Pebble Mine in the sensitive Bristol Bay ecosystem. Right. United Tribes of Bristol Bay, a consortium of Alaska Native tribes fighting to preserve the traditional ways of life in southwest Alaska, has consistently fought against the proposed mine for more than two decades. They eventually gained support from the EPA, which ultimately blocked the mine proposal in January 2023 over concerns it would threaten an aquatic ecosystem supporting the world's most prolific sockeye salmon fishery. The Supreme Court's decision confirms all the hard work put in by tribes and allies, including the Save Bristol Bay Coalition. It remains to be seen whether Alaska's conservative leadership will continue with legal challenges at a lower court level. But for now, Indigenous people have won a big battle in this decades-long fight to protect their homeland.
Good news indeed.
Mm-hmm.
New York City Audubon just released their six-page report on the herons, egrets, and ibises that nest in and around New York City. These are mostly large, great blue herons up to 5 feet tall, usually long-necked, including the glossy ibis, who looks like a flying cross in flight, whereas night herons are short necks. All of these long-legged, charismatic wading birds might be more closely associated in your mind with Florida, not New York City. They are often indicator species, indicating the health of their environment. With their overall numbers declining, the indication is not good throughout the Northeast. The report summarizes the reasons for the decline as human disturbance, pollution, predators, sea level rise, and climate change. Anything that helps mitigate those things helps nesting birds and the people who love them.
Mm-hmm. Herons are in entertainment news. The Japanese anime film, The Boy and the Heron, just won a Golden Globe Award. Reportedly, the first original anime film to top the North American box office after its December release, it is billed as the final film by Japanese animation legend Hayao Miyazaki, age 82, who came out of retirement to make this film, the first non-English animated feature film to win a Golden Globe Award.
Just the other day, a friend was complaining about having to get a new cell phone because his was unusable and buying a new one was cheaper than repairing it. He had no idea there was a right to repair bill in New York State and that that had been in the works for a while and actually passed and went into full force on December 28th, 2023. Ecologic has been reporting on this movement for a while. This new law doesn't do anything for people with older equipment. It took a year since signing, but its requirements have now come into effect. Manufacturers who violate the Fair Repair Law could face enforcement action from New York Attorney General Letitia James. PIRG, the Public Interest Research Group, reports that the New York Right to Repair Law covers many personal electronics, such as cell phones, laptops, and tablets, if they were first sold on or after July 1st, 2023. Technically, the bill covers all electronic products with the exception of medical equipment, motor vehicles, farm equipment, alarm systems, police emergency response equipment, commercial or industrial electrical equipment, e-bikes, recreational vehicles and power tools, business-to-business or business-to-government contracted equipments, off-road equipment. Well, obviously, there is more work to be done. Cars and farm equipment have got to be the next things to work on for the sake of farmers and everybody else. Right to repair laws exempting farm equipment and medical equipment makes food and medical costs higher.
Yeah.
Manufacturers are required to openly share any spare parts, repair tools, or service documentation that they share with authorized repair partners on fair and reasonable terms. If they don't, the Attorney General of New York can fine them. Specifically, manufacturers have to make available parts, tools, and documentation such as schematic diagrams, manuals, or similar kinds of information required for the services of diagnosis, maintenance, or repair of digital electronic equipment. This information is to be free of charge. The good news is that Apple and Google are already making these resources available for customers seeking independent repair. Watch out for companies either complying and or lobbying as to what ends up as clear violation. Clearly, this is the industry putting in a date to delay the bill's application to older devices. Why can't we have a bill that applies to the equipment we are using now? All in all, it is a victory, but for future purchases.
Our guests have a lot of information on green local jobs and how to get them. Right after Mavis Staples singing Change, a collaboration between her and Ben Harper.
Gotta change around here. Gotta change around here. Can't go on this way. Things gotta change around here. Say it loud, say it clear. Things gonna change around here. Fingers on the trigger around here. Fingers on the trigger around here. Bullets flying. Mother's crying, we gotta change around here. Get it straight, be sure that you hear. Things gonna change around here. What good is freedom if we haven't learned to be free? What good is freedom if we haven't learned to be free? Day, year after year, we're gonna change around here.
Yeah.
letter. Blue is the color. One is the number. Now is the time. Gonna change around here. Gotta change around here. Say it loud. Say it clear. We gotta change around here. Gotta change around here. Gotta change around here. Yeah.
Change around here.
We gotta change,
change around here.
Say it loud. Say it clear. We gotta change,
change
around here.
That was Mavis Staples singing Change. Now we welcome our guests. Please introduce yourself, Alex.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having us. My name is Alex Alvarez. I'm co-founder of Soulful Synergy and extremely passionate about sustainability and clean energy, and really excited to have this conversation today around green jobs and just the future of this emerging and most important industry in our world today. I'm just really happy to be here. Thank you again for having us.
Great. Thank you. Dwayne?
Hi, good morning, everyone. Dwayne Norris here, also co-founder of Soulful Synergy, and like my business partner, very excited for today's conversation. Look forward to having, you know, a robust discussion on where green jobs are and where they're headed and how we can all be involved in turning our planet into a more sustainable place.
And Paul, a member of both organizations, Ecologic and Soulless Energy. Paul?
Hello, Donna, Sally, and Ken. Looking forward to today's program. I'm honored to be on the team of Soulful Synergy as Director of Community Engagement. These two, and Alex and Dwayne, have a visionary leadership in terms of what our grid could look like and how we can empower people into economic areas of success to be part of that revolutionary change. And also looking forward to WBI continue to have these conversations and be able to make sure that residents in the community are well aware of these emerging opportunities in terms of green collar employment.
Nice.
So what actually makes a job green?
What makes a job green?
Yeah. When we talk about green jobs, what? Yeah.
That's a good question. I think it depends on who you ask, but you know, for us, it is, you know, something that we try to make sure is sustainable. At the end of the day, we're trying to do work that is environmentally friendly, work that is helping our planet become a healthier place for us to live and reside. And so if the work is not doing that, then I don't really know if it can be called a green job. I think, you know, we've all been, experienced and probably victim to the concepts of greenwashing, where certain companies are labeling things green that are not really green, but don't really have a sustainable impact or are not really truly, you know, something that's a benefit to our planet. For us, we're looking at jobs that are looking at energy efficiency. So how do we make our buildings more sustainable, our energy burden lower? We're looking at how do we create renewable sources of energy? Those are the things that we're focused on when we think of green jobs, is, you know, work that is actually contributing to the health of our planet.
Great. And I would love to follow up to that in terms of when Dwayne and I decided to open up Soulful Synergy to do workforce development around this space was because of the scarcity component, in which we were living in a world where, you know, you have these wars around oil and not around renewable energy, right? Not focusing on those things and bringing these opportunities to the world, where we saw that by doing so, we would be able to provide future generations with a healthy world to live in. So for us, green jobs are those that are more focused on renewable energy and, to Dwayne's point, create sustainability and what sustainability truly means. And I guess the way we look at it, it was, you know, from the indigenous parable of, again, that we're not inheriting this planet from our ancestors, we're actually borrowing it from future generations. And having that understanding, when we look at careers, is keeping that type of mentality. Is it perfect? No, because every, even renewable energy has its own inherent inefficiencies and its own inherent scarcity components to it. But we want to walk in that journey and that pathway in finding careers for people that are going to hopefully get to that level of sustainability.
I'm glad you guys exist. I wish it didn't have to exist, but it's a good thing that you do.
Thank you.
Normal jobs that are destructive for the future.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that sentiment. We share the sentiment. Our goal is to put ourselves out of business, in the current way that we exist, right? If we do our job well and we're focused on, creating a future that's more sustainable, then eventually we won't need to be doing this work and we'll pivot to some other form of work, or the robots will take over and, we won't have to do any work. I joke about that with AI. I have friends that tell me with AI, the world is going to be taken over by robots. But, truthfully, we're proud to be doing this work. We know that there's a significant need. The path and trajectory that we're on, we all know is unsustainable. And as our climate, changes in a way that is causing irreparable damage, this work is necessary. We have to be figuring out ways that we're getting our energy production from renewable sources. We have to figure out a way that we make our existing systems more efficient. We have to find a way to modernize our grid. We have to find a way to move off of fossil fuels. All these things are happening in real time. And, it's an interesting time to be doing this work because things are kind of changing moment to moment, year by year. But we all know that the lift is big and that we have to kind of be moving in the same direction for it to be attainable. So, I hope that we don't have to exist either. I hope that we, move towards a place where, climate change is not the pending threat that it is.
So you offer training programs for people who are looking to get into green construction and so forth?
That's correct. Yeah. So we offer everything from certification-based training to hands-on training in things like green construction, as you mentioned, as well as energy-efficient work, as well as renewable technologies. So we started off providing training just for people to get the certifications that they would need to work in construction generally, right? That means OSHA, fall prevention, drug and alcohol awareness, flagger, scaffold, just relevant and basic certifications that if you went to an employer, they would say, okay, these are things that you would need to get on the job site. Started pairing that with hands-on skills. So people were learning then carpentry, electrical, so everything from how to do framing, measuring, taping, mudding, running electrical wire, pipe installations, appliance installations, et cetera. So that's, again, on the green construction side, where we're now moving everything towards is making sure that they understand how to do that work with an energy-efficient mindset. So meaning the concept of embodied carbon or embodied energy is, where do you source those materials from? How do you make sure that even as you're doing new construction or new development that you're doing with an energy efficient or an energy conservation kind of mindset? As you're doing retrofits to buildings, how are you making sure that you're looking for opportunities to make that building that you might be doing renovations in more efficient? That could be weatherization, air sealing, doing blower door tests, proper insulation, window treatments. It could be, again, retrofitting out, from an older HVAC system into a new, more electric heat pump, those types of things when we talk about green construction. But we're also doing energy efficient training. So we're teaching participants how to perform level one or level two ASHRAE audits. So being able to go into a building and assess any number of systems, from building envelope to lighting to HVAC to heat pumps to
What's HVAC? Boilers.
What's that?
What's HVAC?
Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. Those are the units that traditionally we have all used to, put AC in our homes or, make sure the air is circulating in a way that allows us to live a comfortable temperature. And so we teach our participants how to be able to do, and when I say we, I'm actually not one of the instructors. Thank God for the students. I need more on the business development and outreach and community engagement side, but, our instructors are teaching them how to assess those systems, right? So if you were to walk into a building, residential or commercial building, and you can assess and do what they call an audit of the lighting systems there and see if those lighting systems or those lamps are the most efficient for that space. If they're not, how do you give a recommendation so that building owner can then swap over, retrofit over to something that's more efficient? And then how do you teach them how to leverage the incentives that are available through their local utility? For us, most of that, us that is Con Edison, or through NYSERDA, our New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, to then be able to retrofit your building. So get an assessment and then ultimately move over to something that's more energy efficient. So a lot of the work that we're teaching is participants on how to be able to assess systems that exist and how to make them more efficient. And then in our third lane, so green construction, I mentioned energy efficiency, I mentioned, and then in kind of the third lane, we're looking at teaching participants about the renewable sources of energy. So wind, we have an offshore wind training that's coming, that's in New Jersey. It's coming to New York very soon. We have some training around solar that we're working on. We have some things on geothermal we've been working on, so that people are also looking at how their energy production can be more in line with Mother Nature and with making sure that we have sustainable energy sources. So in those ways, that's really how we're looking at helping to create this ecosystem of future leaders who can help lead this clean energy transition.
And we're coming right back to you in just a moment. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale. Free Speech Radio depends on listener members to be a part of the process. Your funding keeps us on the air.
We're here each week because listeners like you contributed to keep us on broadcast. Please keep us as a BAI buddy with just $10 or $15 a month. Go to give2wbai.org and put eco-logic in the search box to choose from our premiums, or call 212-209-2950 to make your donation today.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
And now back to our guests, Duane Norris, Alex Alvarez, and Paul Presendu.
You know,
I was looking at your website. Oh, go ahead, Donna.
One thing I'm interested in is, how do you guide your students to avoid jobs and companies that just are using them to greenwash their company?
I would love to answer that one. One of the things that we see, and yes, I would love to answer this one in the sense that I've just been thinking about it. You know, one of the reasons why we're in the situation that we're in right now in with this sustainability issue is that the world has worked in silos, right? Did not have seen the world as an ecosystem and the interconnectedness that has created the situation, right? And for us, it's very important that we don't repeat the same mistakes when we're helping our participants and not working in silos, in a sense of us creating, you know, just the one lane of doing things and hoping that the world would just adjust to what we're doing. For in a way that we are able to guide our students is by creating these partnerships and creating an ecosystem with the utility companies, with the program managers of these energy efficiency programs, and these big agencies, organizations, them themselves have programs where they have to vet out vendors, right, to become contractors in order to become part of these energy efficient programs. So by us working with not only the utility companies, these program managers, but also having these, working with the contractors that also have been vetted by these agencies to be able to be an approved contractor and hence an approved employer for this space, is the way that we are working cohesively with the industry and not working in silos, because the silo effect is what really creates that greenwashing and also created the situation that we're in. Being able to work with these different entities and creating an ecosystem between all these moving gears is how we're able to then work with our participants and feel confident that when we're guiding them to find these jobs and these opportunities, we're working with companies that have been vetted and approved by the organizations that are looking to get these goals met.
Wow. Now, I was looking at your website, and right there on the homepage, it talks about transportation electrification training, and it's soulfulsynergy.org. How do you teach that? There's a lot of ways to go in that direction.
That's a great question also. So fortunately, we have received funding from NYSERDA, which I mentioned, for those that don't know, is our New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. New York State is very fortunate to have a quasi-state agency that invests money into all different types of research, job training, et cetera, that's really moving our industry forward. Some states don't have that. So we put in a proposal. We're awarded funding to be able to do electric vehicle training at three different levels, we'll call it. We're focused, one, through that training on incumbent workers, so not so much on new workers, which a lot of our other trainings are focused on, you know, getting people into the industry at an entry-level or mid-level position. This one, we're focused more so on incumbent workers who work at different levels of facilities management, so who might manage, you know, large-scale universities or hospitals or parking structures, places where they already have parking garages or large residential units, et cetera, right? And so on the first level, we're teaching them just about the basics of transportation electrification. What is an electric vehicle? How do you charge it? What are kilowatt hours? How do you think about the amount of energy demand or consumption that may be needed if you're looking to install charging stations, et cetera? What are some of the incentives? What are some of the state regulations that are coming? So those types of things. The second one we're looking, the second module, 3-hour modules, you're looking at site feasibility. So how would you actually assess your site if you have a parking structure or you, again, manage a large multifamily building and you're thinking about parking for your tenants and residents? How would you assess the site? And again, how are you going to be able to assess what type of energy consumption is needed? What type of charging stations would work best? How many you might need based on the population that you're serving, et cetera. And then with the last one, we're looking at actual equipment installation. What would be the process for doing that? You have to work with a local utility. You have to work with the manufacturer, sourcing equipment, kind of everything that goes into that process. So with these three-hour modules, 9 hours in total of training, we're really just trying to help introduce a population that needs to understand these things, because what's happened is like this chicken or the egg, right? People are not going to buy electric vehicles unless they feel like they have enough places to charge them. And so if you don't have building owners and property owners and city officials, city planning departments figuring out where charging stations need to go to make it convenient for people to purchase, they're not going to purchase at the level that we want. So that's really where our training kind of fits into the process.
Does your training include how the electricity grid works, where the electricity comes from in the first place, how it's made? Because that's part of the sustainability.
Yeah, to an extent, it's not a heavy part, but definitely as I mentioned in module one, we are going over electricity, demand on the grid resiliency. So yeah, across the board, we're trying to make sure that people do understand energy consumption. And again, why there's a benefit of moving away from your combustion engine vehicle to an electric vehicle and how that's going to help our planet and what stress that does put on the grid and how we're making sure that we, you know, again, think about modernization of our grid. But, it's not the core, because there's so much to teach in only 9 hours.
Well, the stress on the grid is a very important aspect of it.
Very much.
You know, since people tend to buy electric cars in groups, you know, oh, you got one, I want to get one too, you know, next door neighbor.
Yes.
But the other point is that it moves the pollution from the tailpipe to the power plant, because power plants are not efficient. Most of the fuel is turned into waste heat and not into electricity. Mm-hmm. So I kind of worry about that aspect of, I mean, there's a lot of talk about electrifying buildings and vehicles without talk about cleaning the grid itself. So we're actually creating a market for fracked gas as we advocate electrification.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Dwayne, sir.
No, you go.
So with that said, I mean, we understand that, right? And I think you're hitting right on the money. But there are some things that have been put into place to mitigate this situation, right? So I think this goes a little just deeper than just upgrading the grid because of the electrification of electric vehicles. But for 10 years now, Con Edison, for example, has been in this space of lowering the load first and foremost, and making the building stocks and or anything that is utilizing this electricity to become much more efficient. So a lot of the incentive programs that have begun since, you know, going from incandescent light bulbs to LED light bulbs, the purpose of that was to lower the total load on the grid. On top of that, it also was an option that that Con Edison took because it was economically beneficial to them because they couldn't maintain the load for their clients because they keep having blackouts. And every blackout, they were getting fined. So the only option is to lower the load on the grid and or build a brand new power plant. To your point, it is very true. These power plants are also very inefficient. But with that said, with now you combine this energy efficiency programs that they have been putting forward, everything from lighting to your HVAC to the heating and cooling of your buildings, and also that upgrading the actual grid with new equipment that actually makes it more efficient. Now the introduction of microgrids, right, and renewable energy to support and create now these, you know, pretty much micro power stations is where we're going. Right. So to your point, I think that, yes, in this moment in time, the transition of electric from combustion engines to electric vehicles will put a heavy load. And we are still dealing with the production on the dirty side. But the steps are still being made to make sure that we're doing it the right way, because it wouldn't make sense to overload the grid with renewable energy and everything still being energy inefficient. Right. So we want to make everything energy efficient first and then create the renewable, and hopefully simultaneously if we can. But usually one comes before the other to be most effective. So the steps are being made and being taken by the state and by utility companies to actually, again, make the grid much more efficient, because 1000% by the time we receive the energy here to us, we're probably lost already 90% of it just in transmission. Right. Yeah. So you're completely.
Well, I want to also reiterate, there was Con Ed was going to build a power plant in Rockland County many years ago, and they discovered that making the distribution nodes of the electricity from the existing power plant to the user more efficient actually kept them from having to build a new power plant in Rockland County. So that really does happen in case it seems too far fetched.
Right. And lowering
is still cracked methane. Which worries me a lot, because every bit of cracked methane is not only poison in the air, but poison on the way.
Yeah, but lowering the efficiency also, or lowering the load, increasing the efficiency, means that the dirtiest peaker plants that they use only when they really hit the peaks don't have to be turned on. So that is really important.
To Alex's point, I know that there is a, you know, the desire to create, as you mentioned, smart grids, to create energy and battery storage, and to create kind of distributed energy resources where you are taking some of the load off of the grid into some of these smaller, energy centers. And so, again, I don't know that we're moving fast enough in that direction, especially as we, you know, have a desire to create, as you mentioned, a lot more electrification, and we have not necessarily put the level of investment into renewable energy that I think the state needs to, although there is a goal to get 70% in the next decade. I don't know how realistic that's going to be, but we'll see. But I think that is the goal, is to really be able to, again, modernize the grid while simultaneously getting our energy production from more efficient sources, and also, again, having people burn less fossil fuels and combustion engines. And I think simultaneously, if all these things can work and we're all pulling in the same direction, we'll figure out a way.
Yeah, I've been really, we've all been very impressed with Paul bringing in, telling us about your company and how much you're working with disadvantaged communities. Paul, you there, Paul? Would love you to tell us more about your role in the company.
Oh, wow. As Director of Community Engagement, I really support the company creating, I guess you could say, private-public partnerships. What you mentioned about, you know, engaging disadvantaged communities, this is what really attracts me to the mission statement. A lot of people are engaging in environmental equity as a box that you check off, after you put together your scope of work, after you have your plan, after you have your project proposal and timelines. Well, you know, here at Soulful Synergy, we embrace a culture of having equity in the core nucleus of our programming, making sure that when we're going through the recruitment, we're trying to identify historically marginalized community members or people that represent different demographics of historically underemployed. This is people that are single mothers, the previously incarcerated, people with disabilities, people that have linguistic barriers, because these are people that really have been, I guess you could say, systematically been sidelined from having a fair shot at the American dream and are having difficulty accessing economic stability. You know, I've been told, you know, during my professional journey that if someone is, you know, unemployed, and they're really having difficulty accessing meals and nutritional value, then it's really difficult to talk to them about how they can reduce their Con Ed bill or how they can access renewable energy. So we really had to really have this holistic mindset of how do we empower people economically into being the stewards that we need for our communities and how they can have this vision for 5, 10, 15, 20 years about how this career growth could really empower them in making sure that they could be not only walking with a full head of self-esteem, but also be in alignment with a collective effort of the protection of our shared natural resources. But here at Soulful Synergy, I'm really happy to be part of that, those conversations and seeing how we can engage communities that systematically don't have the socioeconomic bandwidth to have a full-time sustainability director, to have a full-time on-staff environmental engineer, and really be able to support them, create the needed ecosystem, to create a network, to be able to have a fair shot at securing the economic resources that could then be streamlined to members of the community for an economic justice agenda as we combat our climate emergency.
Are you guys at Soulful Synergy more oriented toward applied science or vocational training or both?
Both.
More vocational, but a hybrid of both for sure.
I think we're pivoting more into applied science, to be honest, as AI continues to become prevalent in our lives, because it's just, you know, we pride ourselves, and as we say, we don't chase the puck. We set ourselves where the puck will be, and we want to make sure that we set our participants up with this success. And literally just yesterday, we were having this conversation in which a lot of the things that, you know, we used to do are going to be, you know, made easy by AI. And a lot of these applied sciences are going to become more prevalent through that level of support. And I did want to also add one thing to Paul, though, and I think it's something very important for us to note. It reminded me when he was speaking, and something he always reminded me is from this book, Blessed Unrest by Paul Hawken. Mm-hmm. And one of the main principles that they speak about in the book is about restoration of the planet and social justice. That is a key principle of dual focus on environmental health and social justice, and not asserting it to be inseparable, right? And that's something that Paul brings to the table and embodies for Soulful Synergy, that we understand that restoring the planet and social justice is inseparable. We can't do one without the other. And finding opportunity, and another principle from there about resilience and adaptability, is where we find the jobs, right? Creating that resilience and adaptability for people to find careers to do this for the planet. So I did want to just add that note as well, as far as, you know, what Paul brings to the, you know, what Paul's role is, and how he and embodies, again, the cultural with Soulful Synergy, is of us making sure that those two things are not separated from one another in the work that we do.
That combination is very important, because people tend to cubbyhole them as if they're not related. And it's so wonderful to hear